He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday the 13th edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, and we've got a big bounce taking place in the markets today. You know, it's buy the dip. I mean, buy the dip has been in place for a long time now. We had that dip yesterday, and now today the Dow is up 241. That's a half a percent. Puts the Dow at 46,918. Some very lofty numbers. The NASDAQ is up 121. That's 54 basis points. It's at 22,436. The S&P 500 up about the same on a percentage basis. It's up 54 basis points to 6,708. The Russell 2000 doing best of all. It's up 1.05% right now. The 10-year is backing down just a little bit, but it remains pretty hot, a little too hot for my taste. The 10-year right now is at 4.24%. Gold, which has really softened quite a bit. Gold is down 30 basis points, 5,110. Silver's down 1.67. Oil is backing down a little bit. It's down 1.7% today to 94.09. And even Bitcoin is in rally mode today. It's up 3,097 to 73,373. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. On this Friday, March the 13th, Friday the 13th, so far it's off to a good start. As I wrote my final message yesterday to all of our subscribers and clients who want my daily alerts, there was only one way I could sum up yesterday's market. The only word I could come up with was rotten. It was a rotten day in the market yesterday.
Which, yes, it was.
Yeah, rotten doesn't, not very good, not a very good way to do, but it was. The Dow was down 1.56, the NASDAQ was down 1.78, the S&P was down 1.5%, and it was all because oil was up 8.8%. And therein, I guess, lies the biggest debate going on in the market right now. And there's not a lot of clarity yet. There's still a lot of fog. Will we be able to open the Strait of Hormuz and keep it open going forward? And that seems to be the big question. The oil bulls are running oil up every time they get the chance. They seem to be buying the dips in oil. And the oil bears are betting that this will be a shorter term, will not be a long, prolonged disruption to the oil, the flow of oil through the Strait of Hormuz. And, of course, we've learned a lot about the Strait of Hormuz that we probably didn't know before. We've learned how much oil flows through there, how important it is, who has
control
of it.
2-mile-wide shipping channel.
Yep. Yeah,
2-mile-wide shipping channel
there. Is that what it is, 2 miles?
Yeah. So the width of it is you know 30 something miles, but the actual shipping lane is really only 2 miles wide. So in terms of getting those ships through, you got to in terms of escorting them, it would take a big Navy group to do it because each ship. I mean, I forget how many ships normally go through there a day, and if you're escorting each one, right, then you've got to have a you want to escort more than one at a time, I guess.
Yeah, you have to be on either side of them. But 2 miles should be wide enough. our channel here in the Charleston Harbor is probably only like maybe a football field wide to get those big tankers.
That's what I was going
to
say. Not that wide.
No,
sure.
And then on either side of that channel, it's about 2 or 3 feet deep. I mean, you'll go aground if you don't remain in that channel, which has been dredged. Part of it is a natural channel. The other part is the dredgers keeping it deep enough to handle these big tankers that come in here. The other thing that I saw yesterday, and I don't know if there's any connection, but you always have to weigh the what-ifs. Taiwan Semiconductor was down 7.3% today or yesterday. And you just have to wonder if China isn't over there going, wow, the U.S. is expending all its strength right now with Iran. All their military is there. We could go in and take Taiwan in the middle of the night, and it would take the U.S. 3 weeks to get there. So I don't know. Look, I just have to weigh that. You know, when Elon Musk was asked about will Taiwan become part of China someday, he says, well, it's inevitable because it's right in China's constitution that they believe that they own Taiwan, and at some time there will be a reunification. And I do know this. I witnessed from afar the reunification, the forced reunification of Hong Kong, which went poof in about a month or two, and no longer was Hong Kong, did they have the freedoms that they had before the crackdown by China. So anyways, that's something to keep in the back of your mind. U.S. stocks sink as war against Iran intensifies. Brent crude settled above $100. That seems to be kind of a red flag. Anytime Brent crude goes above $100, you see a sell-off. It even, I mean, why it affects the semiconductor stocks is kind of strange, but I suppose it's supply chain. There's other things that go through the Strait of Hormuz. I was reading about one company, AXTI, and I keep saying, why is that stock so hot? And I found out that they have one product, maybe two, a rare earth mineral that is very important to the chip makers. And that's why that stock has been hitting new highs recently. And who knows? I mean, maybe the supplies go through there. It depends on where it's mined and the course that it takes in getting to the markets that it needs to go to. So all of this comes into play. It's affecting everything from the trucking industry, the railroads, the airline industry, the cruise ship industry. Chemical stocks are flying higher. A lot of the needed chemicals go through there. So the tentacles are far and wide, coming from the closure and the choke point there in the Strait of Hormuz. We're hearing from Hegseth that Ayatollah Jr., Khomeini Jr., has been wounded. They think he's wounded and barely functioning. We don't know the truth to that. But he did put out a message. And, of course, CNN and NBC, I think, ran 4 minutes of Iran propaganda here on U.S. television. European indexes slip with no signs of de-escalation in the Middle East. I would say, and I've said this before recently, that Europe was on a roll. I mean, just an absolute roll, outperforming the U.S. markets last year by a wide margin, having one of their best years ever that I've seen. And that all came to an end because they are more susceptible, they are more vulnerable with their very fragile energy infrastructure and supplies and their mandates, right, to decrease fossil right. fuels and everything. They've kind of dug themselves into a hole, you know.
The timing. Well, the timing was bad because what would happen is they're you know, this is, you know, towards the end of the winter for Europe. Their inventories of natural gas and you know, heating elements, that type of thing, were actually at the lowest point, you know, of the season. And of course, right, you get this supply shock. And, yeah, I mean, it couldn't have happened at a worse time for them in terms of, you know, how much gas they, it's kind of like, I picture it, Bill, whenever we get a hurricane warning or something, you know, and everybody goes to the gas, you know, gas,
and toilet
place
paper
at the same time.
Yes, so toilet paper aisle, whatever reason. I don't know why that is.
Well, but my dad used to always say, Barry, there's a storm coming in 5 days. Make sure you go, you know, fill your gas can, you know, tank up. Well, you know, in terms of Europe, they had it on empty and the storm came, you know.
Yeah. Well, so that's Europe. This has definitely brought a halt to the screaming run by the European indices. I watch a Vanguard sector fund, VGK, as my proxy for Europe. And Europe has very slow growth to begin with, but they did have a good year last year, beating our markets. And, of course, the Asian markets are very much dependent on foreign oil. Japan, for instance, South Korea, for instance, China. And it's hurting those markets, too. The Asian markets, which outperformed last year, are now not looking very good. There is news on the oil front, trying to open up the spigot a little bit. More on that when we come back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we've talked about some of the levers that the markets have, the oil markets especially, to open up the spigot. The United States has issued a 30-day waiver allowing countries to purchase sanctioned Russian oil and petroleum products already stranded at sea, expanding a temporary exemption granted last week to India alone. So they're allowing India to buy that Russian oil to ease the supply a little bit. Notice we haven't heard anything about Ukraine lately. Not a word about the Ukraine. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said in a post on X that this was a narrowly tailored short-term measure that applies only to oil in transit. In other words, the sanctions on Russian oil remain. That is what's fueling the war, their war against Ukraine. The waiver makes Russian crude and fuel aboard about 30 tankers in Asian waters potentially available for purchase, provided the cargoes were already at sea when the exemption was granted. So that may have something to do. We do have oil prices down a little bit here today, 2.6%. We're not above 100 anymore, but there are a lot of levers they can pull.
To put it in perspective, I think saw a number where Russia had 19 million barrels of oil essentially on the water, right, in some form or fashion. So, you know, what we, I mean, when you think about some of these numbers, though, we talked about 10 million barrels going through the Strait of Hormuz in a day. So if they've got, you know, 19 million barrels, right, then that's basically 2 days worth for the, you know, for not just for India. India's not, you know, getting all 10 million of those on a daily basis, but, it's a, you know, that's where that 400 million release, right? Like we talked yesterday, 400 million barrel release, that's really only 40 days, right? In terms of, in terms of what that, because we're up against a time game, right? The longer this goes on, you know, really the better it is probably for the Iranian, you know, current Iranian regime, and the worse, the more pain it is for the U.S. economy, you know, for the U.S. economy, for the world economy as a whole.
Yes, Brent crude settled above $100 a barrel yesterday for the first time in 3.5 years. That's London, priced in London, as concerns can grow about a protracted period of disruption. Now, many traders initially expected days of disorder. Well, I wouldn't have expected that. I mean, days is pretty optimistic. Now they are expecting the turmoil to last weeks or even months. But still, you know, it is transitory. It just depends. I mean, how it's going to put the squeeze on here for a while. And we'll just have to take it a day at a time. U.S. officials said Iran has started to litter the strait with sea mines, and Energy Secretary Wright said the Navy is not yet ready to start escorting tankers through the vital waterways through which 20% of the world's oil typically flows. I did see the interview, one of the interviews with Wright yesterday, and he says we're just not there yet with being able, we have not cleared. It sounds like the mines are a big problem. And, of course, Iran's new supreme leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, promised to keep the strait closed and attack U.S. bases in the Middle East. The war is causing the biggest oil disruption in the history of the global markets. That was put out by the International Energy Agency yesterday. And then, of course, they've been okaying these releases from oil reserves from around the world. Natural gas also is really shooting up. I'm going to take a look at that ETF. UNG is your natural gas. It's pretty flat. That's very flat. Okay, now let's look at LNG, which hit a new high, 52-week high yesterday. It's up a little bit today. That's Cheniere Energy, which is probably the best proxy stock for liquid natural gas. The symbol itself is LNG, so we do have some exposure to LNG in our relative value portfolio right now. Wall Street does not believe the Iran war will be short-lived, and markets are reacting. Well, you know, that's all I can say is Wall Street has not had a very good record of getting it right. Investors are giving an equal chance for the oil markets to move down to 70 or to jump to 125. So it's kind of in the middle. You really don't know. An equal chance, 50-50 that it goes down to 75 and 50-50 that it goes up to 125. But the markets definitely, with the yesterday that I described as rotten, obviously yesterday was the day where the markets thought, this is going to last a long time, and then you're seeing this bounce here today. So go figure.
And that's the definition of uncertainty right there, right?
100%,
in terms of a coin flip. Yeah. So it's and the one thing we know is the one thing the market definitely doesn't like is uncertainty. So and that's where we're at.
Well, we got some Elon Musk news here today. The S&P weighs rule changes that could speed SpaceX S&P 500 entry. Well, why is that important? Well, I don't know what it was, the rule before. Maybe you had to be a publicly traded company for a certain amount of time. I'm thinking that's probably, that would make sense, before you can enter into the S&P 500. But, you know, if you can enter into the S&P 500, you would see waves of billions of dollars in forced buying, because if you're an index, you have to own. Whether you like Elon or not, it's part of the index. And I also see that Musk is apologizing. This is kind of a weird story about his Grok AI was not ready for prime time. And he's going back to the drawing board. And Tesla had invested $2 million in his AI venture. Now he's going to give people that own Tesla a piece of SpaceX instead of the AI venture. Musk apologizes for not building XAI right initially, following a mass exodus that has seen at least seven of his initial co-founders leave, including most recently Zihong Dai. Elon Musk has apologized for not building XAI right. No, that's a mess. When you got to go back and tear it up and rebuild it, you know, I just think of all the things in your life, whether it's a sprinkler system, a recipe that you just had to go back and undo it and start all over again. That's a mess, and there's a lot of money involved there in redoing Grok AI. Kind of surprised that I was using it. Of course, I'm not using it to the extent that others are using it. But that's an interesting story. Okay, we'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit about fertilizer as planting season is amongst us and pollen season is amongst us, too. You might notice me coughing a little bit.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. And I'm just looking at some of the stocks on the move here today and what is turning in to be a pretty nice bounce. Oh, no, we've lost the bounce. What happened, Barry? What did you do? Did you say something?
I was thinking that, you know, I mean, in these kind of events, and we've seen it, you know, whether it was COVID, as we would go into weekends, particularly early on in COVID, but anytime you've got this uncertainty going into weekends, you tend to have a sell-off, and people want to sit on the sidelines, see what happens over the weekend, what explodes, what doesn't explode, and then, you know, then come back and revisit things on Monday. So I was kind of surprised at the bounce, just giving the fact that it's Friday versus, you know, some other day of the week at this point.
Yeah. Oh, well. I mean, so much for that. Maybe it will come back. We'll see. There's been a bounce in the fertilizer stocks, the CF Industries. CF was the biggest mover in the S&P 500 yesterday. I don't know. Those kind of moves, though, are always short-lived. I don't think they're really playable. I don't think you're going to. It just happens to be the wrong time for fertilizer prices to explode to the upside. I'll have to take a look and see how much it's going to cost for me to, green up my lawn, which has been dormant now for quite some time, but getting ready to turn green here. The U.S. reportedly advances critical minerals discussion with the EU and Japan on a price floor. Now, what do we mean by a price floor? I can tell you what we mean by a price floor. If anybody comes along and produces one of those rare earth minerals that China dominates the market in, China comes along and dumps gobs of it onto the market to destroy the market and put the competition out of business. And that's, you know, one of the tactics that China has used for many years in steel, aluminum, other things. Solar panels. Yep.
They destroyed the whole solar panel business in like 2012 or so when they just dumped tons and tons of cheap solar panels onto the market.
And by putting in a price floor, China would not be able to sell underneath that price floor. I don't know how you stop them from doing it, but that is a big problem. And China has used that tactic in many areas over the years to destroy competition. From pitch to portfolio, Goldman Sachs' top World Cup stock ideas. You know, the World Cup's coming up in June, and there will be a lot of World Cup activity here in America. Kansas City will have a big role to play there in Jackson County, Missouri. In Kansas City, they'll have one of the big games, a lot of the big games there. The championship will be played on July 19th. The U.S. will host 78 games. This is a North America affair. So, look, it's south of the border. It's north of the border. Mexico and Canada will host 13 games each, but 78 will be in the U.S., at different locations. It's going to be Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Dallas, Houston. Atlanta will be the closest one to us.
Miami. I think is Charlotte
nope.
hosting one or
nope.
no?
I
they're
don't
not.
See
are they? Yep, I didn't think so. Yeah, Atlanta. That's right.
Which brings up another issue. I was listening to a talk show last night, and he was talking about the threat of sleeper cells here in the U.S. We had two incidents yesterday with, it looked like terrorism. One in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, Bloomfield Hills West,
wow.
The Jewish center. And the other one was at the college, Old Dominion, which I believe is that it's Virginia, right? Yeah, Virginia, Old Dominion. But the threat is these Iranian sleeper cells, the threat of drones, them teaming up with the drug cartels. There's really no defense against a drone. I mean, you can tie anything you want on a drone, explosives, whatever, and there's really no control. I mean, somebody would have to shoot it down, and that is a big threat that the U.S. is grappling with, is the threat of drones. I was on the 19th floor downtown San Diego in my conference room. I had a beautiful conference room that overlooked the whole San Diego Harbor and everything. And a drone from outside flew right up to the window of the conference room and just hovered there for a while. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on with this? Spying on us. Trying to figure out how we pick these great stocks. No, I'm just... But you have no protection. And then one day I'm working in the yard, and a drone is hovering over my yard. I gave it a gesture that wasn't real friendly, and it buzzed away. But those drones are very invasive, Barry, very invasive. And they can wreak a lot of havoc. And they were talking, I think it was the Charlie Kirk show, they were talking about the scenario of a drone flying into a stadium packed with fans with explosives, or a swarm of drones. You know, like we're checking all the people coming into the stadium, we're going through metal detectors, but how do you stop somebody from a private home nearby? That's a problem. Drones are a problem. And it's something that we have to be aware of. Another reason, I guess, to carry a gun. I don't carry one, but you could always shoot a drone down, I suppose. You know, I don't know if that triggers the explosive. New York City waves raising. Remember when the fight for $15? I remember when I was in San Diego, they marched the fight for $15 for minimum wages. Now, in New York City, they are discussing in the city council today raising the minimum wage to $30 per hour by 2030, because they're saying people can't live on $17 an hour, and they want to raise it to $30 so people can afford to live in New York. Now, that opens up the whole question of, should we be supporting people to live in an expensive city, and maybe they should be living somewhere else? Should we be subsidizing them? Should we be making sure they have a living wage? Now you're crossing the line into socialism and communism. But New York City, it's New York City, and they'll do what they do right now. Uber and Hyundai are launching robo-taxi rides in Vegas. Well, you know, I was just in Phoenix. And at the hotel I was staying, several of those little Waymos pulled up. People got in them, the back seat, and off they go with no driver. And I saw one exiting the hotel, and you got to make kind of a left-hand turn there on a very busy street. And it watched and watched, and then boom, it went right when there was an opening. There's a lot of technology involved in all of that. But anyways, Las Vegas, there goes the taxi industry. I wouldn't want to own a taxi in Las Vegas. Micron, next week. Let me see when that is. I think it's the 20th. Let's see when it is. MU. That will be a very interesting earnings report. Micron is going to report on 318, five more days. So I guess Wednesday we'll get Micron's report. That's a pretty perky chart there. That's a pretty solid chart on Micron right now. They are expected to make this year $8.29. That would close out 2025, $8.29. 2026, $36 per share. And next year, 2027, $52 per share. That's the most meteoric rise in earnings I've ever seen since I've been in the markets. If you go back to 2024, it was $1.30 per share, then to $8.29, then $36. That's a 334% increase, and then $51.66. Wow. Now, what kind of multiple are you going to put on that? Well, the market's putting about a 75 multiple right now on that $51.66. And while those earnings have gone up, the stock has gone from 80 to 420. And nothing proves my point more than stocks follow earnings than a company going from $1.30 to $51 and the stock going from $80 to $4.22. Stocks follow earnings and earnings expectations. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, more massive fallout from the race to all EV vehicles by 2030. You see Honda Motors today? I mean, Honda sells a lot of cars. This is, their shares are plummeting to a one-year low. Their first annual net loss as a company since listing on the Tokyo Stock Exchange in 1957, triggered by a staggering $15.7 billion restructuring charge as management scraps three flagship North American EV models. And this isn't the only company. I mean, Stellantis is like, you know, teetering on the brink of disaster. Yeah. Ford wrote off a lot. GM seems to still be committed to it. Mercedes-Benz wrote off a big loss. And, you know, it just goes to show that the consumer has to have an appetite for it. Now, the only way you're going to get people...
Know your customer, right? Know your customer. I mean, that's where we really came to. Obviously, they got stuck with all this, just given, you know, regulations really is what forced them into this. I guess probably forced them into not listening to their clients or customers, right?
Well, I mean, that's the only way you're going to get people into EVs is where you force them. You have to use force to get them into an EV. They were going to build a Honda SUV sedan, an Acura RSX, three planned models that they're pulling the plug on and totally, you know, doing an about-face. And that's every single one of the EV companies that make EV cars has gone the same route that Honda's going in right now. The one that stayed on the sidelines was Toyota, not really committing to it at all.
They committed to the hybrid and are doing great at it.
Yep. So if I look at the chart of HMC, which sells a lot of cars, it's hitting a new 52-week low today. The other one that I think, you know, number one, as your sales slow down and as you become more and more of a mature company, you're also vulnerable to disruption. And Adobe would be a good case of that. Adobe is down 6.3% today. The CEO, he's going to get out and turn it over to someone else. Of course, he's saying it's time for retirement, time to move on. But they're in a very difficult place right now, and it shows up in the chart, which, I mean, Adobe, one of the great innovators, one of the great disruptors of all time. I remember when Eastman Kodak was in the Dow.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Eastman Kodak mm-hmm. was a very powerful company. Eastman Kodak, believe it or not, is still around. In fact, they reported earnings today on the same day that Adobe, and I would say digital, totally upset the apple cart for Eastman Kodak. I remember back in the 70s, I would go to the concerts at the San Diego Sports Aroma, which we lived very close by, and my dad had a contract with them, and he got 4 free tickets to every event there. Front row tickets, by the way, and I would go with my little 35 millimeter camera, sit in the front row, and take pictures of many of these rock stars, and drop off the film at a deposit box on the way home, and then pick up the negatives, and make prints, color prints of the pictures. I still have a large collection of Leonard Skinner and Joe Walsh and Stephen Stills and Eric Clapton and all the greats over time. Those were the days, and I used to develop photography. We used to have photo lab in junior high where you would put the
Kodak
paper. We did
too. Yeah, in the dark room.
Yeah,
you get in the dark room, and you know, it was. I mean, you get to watch the. It was really amazing at the time, right? Watching that picture finally pop up on the paper. Of course, now we get
like
instant gratification with your phone. But
you don't have to. We used to Dean's photo mat. We used to drop our film off at the photo mat and then pick it up, or at the drugstore or at the supermarket. Walmart, Costco used to develop pictures, and now you print them out yourself on your home printer. So total disruption. Adobe, I think AI. There is now. I don't believe AI is going to disrupt every software stock, but Adobe definitely is going to be hurt big time when you can do a lot of this stuff like creating logos and doctoring pictures and videos and all kinds of things using AI and not having to subscribe to Adobe's tools. So there's a casualty of AI. Okay, well, I'll be writing the newsletter today. Earnings season is over. We're now in between earnings seasons. We have 2 more weeks before the first quarter of 2026 closes. And then we start the whole parade all over again. As of last week, the numbers for this quarter were 12%. We're expecting 12% growth in earnings for the first quarter of 2026 versus the first quarter of 2025, 12% year over year. And that's the benchmark where we begin, and we go from there. And, of course, the oil stocks, I would think their earnings will be going up, and the companies that use a lot of oil and a lot of fuel, their earnings will be ratcheted down. Maybe they offset each other. But what is important is that bottom line S&P 500 earnings estimate, which I publish every week in my newsletter, along with my four portfolios and what we own and all kinds of good things. The top stories, the best stories now from this past week that we talked about. So you can get 4 free weeks. Go to GundersonCapital.com. to set up an appointment with us about portfolio management and using our portfolios in your retirement plans. We have everything from plain vanilla, very safe, to more aggressive as you go up the ladder. set up an appointment with us at 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.